Your latest book is about the transformative power of reading, and it's called Morningstar: Growing Up with Books, and it's really about your discovery of a love of books at a very young age. There are many of us who are from Seen Better Days factory towns that mirror your hometown of West Warwick.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I've been doing some readings from the book since it came out a few weeks ago, and people come up and say, oh, that was Woonsocket. That was Lowell. And I say, no, it's West Warwick, but they certainly recognize it.
What was it like to be so enthralled with reading that your parents literally had to throw you out of the house to go outside and play and get you away from books?
You know, that was really a challenge for them, I'll tell you. There was no place I'd rather be than in a book. And I always have to say, I had great parents and a loving family, so it wasn't like I needed to escape. The day I started to read, I had one thought. I want to live in a book. And I've worked hard to do that ever since.
Now, what was that like in school, you know, in West Warwick, a town in those days seems to really honor their high school mascot, those Wizards sports teams, and all those football players seem to be. Were you kind of ostracized in high school?
A little bit, but you know, I think we find like-minded people. By the time I got to high school, there were maybe 15 of us who had college on our brain and loved to read, or some of them were into this new thing called computers.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually formed great friendships and relationships. So we weren't in with the big popular crowd, but we had fun together.
Do you still have friends from those days?
Oh my goodness, I was talking to my best friend today. We met in seventh grade math class. And many others, they show up at readings all the time, which is really fun.
You know, I'm taken by the range of genres that you grasped, even as a young reader. You know, there are books that a critic might consider slight, like Eric Segal's Love Story. And then there's venerated literature, like John Updike's Rabbit Run and Tolstoy's War and Peace. How did you make such choices?
Well, mostly I chose by thick books, so because I could only get to the library once a week. So I would take two or three really big ones like Dr. Zhivago or The Count of Monte Cristo, those big, fat epics, you know. Love Story was a little different. I spotted it at Walden Books in the Warwick Mall. I'd never heard of it. I didn't know it was a bestseller. Something about that colorful cover caught my eye, and it was actually the first book I ever bought. I gave it as a gift to my cousin.
It seems like your childhood reading informed your days at the University of Rhode Island, where you studied English. Then, in a kind of unusual twist in a career in those days, you take a job as an airline attendant for 8 years after college with TWA, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
Now, what was that like?
I loved it. You know, I thought when I was in college and I wanted to be a writer, I thought writers needed to have adventures. Like they had to run with the bulls,
sure,
like Hemingway did, jump naked in fountains like the Fitzgeralds. I learned, of course, that really what a writer has to do is what Eudora Welty said, sit on her own front porch. But at 21, I wasn't looking inward. I wanted fun and adventures. And I certainly had them. I traveled all over the world. I was, for half that time, an international flight attendant. And it taught me a lot, independence, listening. So people always comment on my dialogue, but I'm telling you, it comes from all those hours eavesdropping on passengers.
Wow. And how does that experience shape your writing beyond the dialogue?
Well, I think that, you know, here I was, a girl from a small town. I went to a big school, but it was still, 15 minutes from my house. So thrown into the big world made me grow up and made me learn a lot. I think it helped me mature, but it helped, you know, once you travel to other countries, I think you start seeing your place in the world better. And that helps a writer.
It takes you out of your comfort zone. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You think a writer has to do that?
I think we all have to do it.
You know, as I read this book, I was taken at many points about some almost ineffable need you had to transcend your situation. I wonder, was this ambition, angst, depression, a yearning? How would you label this?
I probably had a good dose of angst, actually, even for a kid. But it was really a yearning. And as I say in the book, I couldn't name what I was yearning for. I didn't know. I just knew that I wanted to go beyond the small town. I remember my cousins would get married at our church, which was Sacred Heart, and they would have their reception at the Club 400. And I always had fun at those weddings, but I remember thinking I wanted to do that, even that differently. I just had a desire for something more, something bigger that I couldn't name. I think now, looking back, I was just yearning to discover myself and who I was, you know, and I couldn't articulate it then.
You didn't want to be defined by the corners of your small town.
Exactly, exactly. And those, remember, I grew up in the 60s and 70s. A lot of those rules and rituals were being questioned and turned upside down. So I think that added to that desire to do something different.
Do the times make the woman or the woman make the times?
Exactly. I think it's equal doses, which I talk about in the book.
I know you do, and it's great. Books have long been a refuge for you, it seems. Your latest novel, The Book That Matters Most, was written while you were going through a divorce, and it's about a newly divorced woman and her book club. Did your personal situation affect that book at all?
Well, that's funny because actually, by the time it came out, I still wasn't divorced. So the publishing world was a little behind my real life in that case. but I was, of course, thinking about marriage and when people stay and when they go. It must have been on my mind when I wrote The Book That Matters Most. You do pull from, you know, your own emotional life, because I always say fiction is true, not the facts, but the true emotional piece has to be there for it to work.
You know, it's really interesting in that you're someone who sees yourself getting out of a small town and going off and having these great adventures, living in New York City, traveling around the world, getting a master's degree, I believe, also
yes.
in New York.
Yep.
And yet you come back to Providence. 10 miles from where you grew up.
What's that about, Scott? I know, they say Rhode Islanders always come back, don't they? Well, I came back when I fell in love. And I did kind of keep my toes in the city, sublet various apartments over the years, always taught at NYU or the New School. And then over the past few years, spent more and more time there. So I think, honestly, I'm so lucky because I get the best of both. I get to be near my mom, who's 86, and still in the house where she was born in West Warwick. I get to have my kids go to great schools and have an urban childhood without being, you know, New York City. But I get to get all the great stuff of New York City, too.
Thanks an awful lot, Anne Hood. It's a fabulous book about the transformative way that literature works on us. It's called Morning Star, Growing Up with Books, by native Rhode Islander and our friend Anne Hood. Thank you, Anne.
Thank you so much, Scott, for having me.